Possessions are not truly belongings. They don't really belong in our houses anymore. They are only distracting us from the things that do belong. You're going to have to make a decision about object after object as you go through your house to minimize it. So get ready. Understand, however, that your decisions many times will not be simple ones. An object either has value for you or it does not. Whatever combination of function, aesthetics, and sentiment an object in your home might represent, there can be arguments on both sides of the question of whether to keep it or get rid of it. Something might sort of help you in living a purposeful life, and yet might also sort of hinder you. Instead of an obvious yes or no, it might be more like weighing the alternatives on a scale. The way I think of it is that, in addition to whatever monetary price an object may originally have had, it also has an ongoing clutter cost in terms of the money, time, energy, and space it demands from you. That clutter cost may or may not be greater than its present value for you in terms of its utility, beauty, or meaning. Or in other words, an object is both a burden and a benefit at the same time. So you're going to have to weigh both sides and make a benefit versus burden judgment call. If you're honest about the relative weights of the benefits you get from your possessions and the burdens they place on you, I believe you'll decide that many of your possessions really aren't worth holding on to. Ask yourself, do I need this? Really need it? Not if its burden is greater than its benefit. Never organize what you can discard. Hashtag minimalist home. The well-known Pareto principle, named after an economist, says that in many situations, around 80% of the effects come from around 20% of the causes. As applied to our homes, this principle suggests that we might use 20% of our possessions around 80% of the time. This doesn't necessarily mean you can get rid of 80% of the possessions in your home, though I've known people who have done that and more, but it does suggest that when you use necessity as the basis for deciding what to keep, you're going to be able to get rid of a lot. Go into your minimalist home makeover picturing yourself not getting rid of a little here and there, but eliminating large quantities and even whole categories of possessions. Why not, if they're not necessary? A self-energizing process. When I started minimizing our home back in 2008, it didn't take long for me to begin recognizing significant ways my life was improving. Only 2 days into minimalism, the first benefit occurred to me. As I was getting rid of things and had no intention of replacing them with new things, I realized that owning less offered a financial opportunity. As we accumulated fewer things, we would spend less money. Additionally, it would cost much less because we would have fewer things to store, maintain, repair, and clean. Just one day later, it occurred to me how my new life would be affecting my kids. My son was 5 and my daughter 2, and they were both soaking up values from us as parents about how to live and how to achieve significance. Becoming minimalist modeled for my children the beliefs that personal belongings are not the key to happiness, that security is found in character, and that the pursuit of happiness runs on a different road than the pursuit of possessions. The next day, less than 96 hours into pursuing minimalism, I noticed how it was becoming easier to find things in my house. Over the coming days and months, I noticed how easy it was becoming to clean the house, how the process was freeing me from past mistakes, how my home and life were becoming more peaceful and less stressful, and how minimalism was allowing me to own higher quality things. Here's the point of all this. Those benefits kept me going. The more I noticed and was able to articulate how owning less was improving my life in practical ways, the more I wanted it. What started as a simple feeling of calm, sitting in a newly minimized living room or decluttered vehicle, provided motivation to move forward. There is no doubt you will quickly begin to see the positive results of owning fewer possessions as soon as your first room is completed. Pay attention to these advantages as they come. Reflect on them. Savor them. Discuss them with the others in your family. In this way, the process of minimizing will itself energize you to keep going until you have reached your goal of a fully decluttered house. We minimize not out of guilt, but because of our goals. It's a positive process. Let's enjoy it and make the most of it. And then as we near the end, let's see how the process has caused us to rethink and expand our goals for what we can do with the rest of our lives. Our home minimalism makeover becomes a makeover of us when we let it transform our future. A minimizing accelerator, removing duplicates. When I was just getting started on my minimalist journey, I ran across an article in which the writer said you only need two towels, one in use and one in the laundry. I remember thinking, huh, I guess she has a point. I opened my linen closet and noticed at least 20 towels. There were new towels in the front, old towels in the back, even some animal-shaped towels for the kids. And that didn't include the towels in the guest bathroom downstairs, or the hand towels in washcloths, or the beach towels in that other closet. Now, we were a family of four, so obviously we'd need more than two towels total. But the ideal number was certainly less than we had. So we got rid of quite a few. We just didn't need as many as we had. More importantly, I began noticing duplicates everywhere. Televisions, pillows, blankets, jeans, shoes, coats, cleaning supplies, brushes, coffee mugs, Tupperware, pots and pans, staplers, scissors, games, tools. In all these categories, we had accumulated unnecessary multiples. So removing the extras was an easy way to start minimizing all around our home. If you're looking to make progress in whatever room you enter to minimize, identify the duplicates. Keep your favorite or maybe a few favorites in each category. Get rid of the rest. It will be a good way to make progress fast. Friend of the poor. Anya is a nurse, wife, and mother who decluttered her home in Hawaii. She loves how her family's home has become much more open and easy to maintain. But more came out of her minimalism home makeover than just that benefit. She wrote to me, "Realizing that my time does not need to be spent on possessions has been liberating. I noticed that once I had more time available, I had to define what my life passions were." Just to be clear, minimalism doesn't guarantee you find more meaning and significance in life. But it does, almost always, open your eyes wider to these issues and create a context where you can think through them better. That's what happened to Anya, and she was determined to get it right. "As I let go of my possessions," Anya said, "I was much more inclined to share my time and finances with others. By spending less on possessions, I was able to decrease my hours at work. Once I stepped back from that environment, I was able to think, What type of nursing would I do if my hourly wage did not matter? For Anya, this meant the reawakening of a dormant dream. Over the years, she had thought about how rewarding it would be to use her nursing skills to care for underserved populations in foreign countries. But each time, the thought had faded. She had her job, first with the U.S. military and then with a private medical practice. She had bills to pay and things to take care of at home, and so the longing to serve the poor remained unfulfilled, leaving a vague sense of dissatisfaction in her heart. All that changed as a result of the mental refocusing that minimizing brought with it. In the summer of 2017, Anya joined a team to provide medical care to poor families in Honduras through the nonprofit Friends of Barnabas. During that volunteer trip, she traveled to 5 different communities with a mobile clinic. Her team saw everything from common colds to cardiac anomalies, hypertension, and hypoglycemia. They treated more than 1,000 patients, referring the most serious and surgical cases to a facility equipped to take care of them. She loved the warm, smiling welcome she received from the Hondurans, and at the same time she felt her own heart expanding. She came back from Honduras a different person. "When I got home, I hugged my husband and son tighter," she said. "On top of that, I saw the homeless man on the street who needed ice water and food on a 98-degree day with new eyes. I didn't stress about the 10 minutes needed to provide for him and tell him he was cared about." Today, Anya is planning more trips where she can volunteer her medical skills for the poor. And she recommends minimizing to anyone who wants better relationships and a more meaningful life. Removing the excess allows time and focus that we need to make a loving connection to those around us, she related. You don't have to go to another country or have medical training to enjoy the benefits of minimalism. It can start right in your family and community. However, if you feel pulled toward other countries and cultures, not being tied down and attached to belongings allows you the opportunities to explore and serve freely. I don't know what dream is bubbling within your mind, or maybe you don't have a dream right now, but one day you will. Minimalism will unearth a hidden passion in you, even as it unearths the home that your house ought to be. But whatever motivates you, consider minimalism the step you need to take to remove the barriers to pursuing major life goals. Sure, making the decision to minimize requires you to overcome inertia, tendencies, and stagnation. But the momentum that comes from it can carry you to a whole new and better place in life. Not sure? Experiment. Sometimes it's easy to know when it's time to get rid of something in your home. Other times, not so much. The electric skillet, needed or not. Those blue pumps that you like but that are similar to the black pair, needed or not. The gas-powered blower you bought to scatter leaves in the fall, needed or not. To help you make the harder choices in de-owning, or the ones that you and another member of your household disagree over, try doing without an item for a set period of time. I often recommend 29 days. Only afterward decide whether it's necessary to your home or superfluous. I call this experimenting. After your trial period, if you find yourself wishing you had the item because it would have come in handy or you otherwise missed it, then maybe you should keep it. On the other hand, if you find yourself getting along without it just fine, then go ahead and get rid of it. Either way, experiment successful. Now you know. You can do it. Now that you've seen how minimizing can transform your home and your life, I hope you're raring to go and can hardly wait to turn to the next chapter and get started. But then again, you might still be hesitant. So let's touch on one more important point before we jump into our first space. Maybe you don't need a vision to help you stick to the trail until you get to the summit. Maybe you need a shove to get you started on the hike in the first place. If so, these thoughts are for you. Over the years, I've heard just about every reason why someone feels held back from minimizing his or her home. I've always been a messy person. I can't change now. This house is too big, and we've been collecting stuff for too long. We'll never be able to get through it all. Between my job and my husband and the kids and getting to Pilates twice a week, I don't have time for something else. We've got a major crisis going on in the family, and that's taking up all our attention right now. I tried decluttering before and didn't get very far. Why should it be different this time? I don't consider these to be excuses, at least not usually. There's some truth in all these statements, and they often reflect serious human pain. But I also know that it's possible to go ahead and minimize a home despite issues like these. Why? Because I've seen it done so many times. Heather wrote, "After my seventh baby joined our family, in the midst of postpartum depression and feeling like I couldn't keep up with everything asked of me, my life felt completely out of control. I cleaned up the same messes every day and never actually decluttered anything. My house felt the opposite of peaceful. But then I heard about minimalism. It has changed my house, health, and relationships. I've lost 30 pounds, taken control of my house, and have more time for my family." Maida wrote, "I am a retired teacher of 34 years and a hoarder because of my environment. From the time I was little, my dad always said, 'Don't pollute Grandmother Earth,' and 'Waste not, want not.' So a desire to hold on to things became my driving attitude. With all that, and 34 years of teaching materials, the stuff has definitely piled up. I'm on the path to minimalism by changing my lifelong attitude of needing to save everything." Allie wrote, "I'm a second-time, divorced mom of two, one severely autistic, and I have an autoimmune disease and terrible anxiety. I was forced to sell our house and a car. Despite fear, fatigue, and panic attacks, I uncluttered years of stuff. My kids and I got rid of 80% of our belongings. It was tough and exhausting, but going through that was better than not. We learned a new way of living. It was such a relief. Months later, when we moved into an 800-square-foot apartment, we decided to declutter more and more. I never thought I would enjoy living with less or that it was possible. But it became true for us. It is possible for anyone." If there is one secret formula to living simply and clutter-free, it is this: believe it is possible and take the next step. Do that and you'll bring the mountain peak within reach. Of course, the path to being clutter-free will take some time. But imposing a demanding deadline on yourself is not part of the Becker method. I believe it's a good thing to make steady progress and keep up the momentum so you don't stall out. But there's no one looking over your shoulder to make sure you finish your home makeover by a certain date. Conquer the project room by room on your own schedule, and eventually you'll be done. The completion will be wonderful whenever it occurs. You can conquer your clutter. Believe it. Mind over mess. Not every possession is a belonging. Hashtag minimalist home. Next, we're going to get into the specific spaces of your home. When you're ready to listen to the next chapter, have a seat in your living room, because that's the room you're going to be minimizing first. Action recommendation. As you're minimizing your home space by space, take before and after pictures or videos and share your progress with friends over social media. Use hashtag minimalist home. The positive responses you get from them will encourage you to keep going. And who knows, you might motivate some of them to start their own minimalism home makeover. Part 2. Spaces. Chapter 3. Us Rooms. Decluttering the living room and family room. I was standing outside my garage the first time I heard the word minimalism. And not being one to hesitate when I know I'm onto something good, I undertook my first decluttering project right then and there. The car parked in front of me. I found this task easy enough. While there was plenty of stuff piled up on the seats, on the floors, and in the glove compartment, there weren't a lot of hard decisions to make. I knew I didn't need that CD anymore, or that map, or those Happy Meal toys, so I finished in short order. Quickly, I moved on to the living room, mostly because I knew it was another space I could find success in. My living room was full of things that didn't pass the "Do I need this?" test. A pile of magazines, rows of DVDs, odds and ends that had collected on the side tables, shelves of decorations that had no particular meaning, and toys piled in a corner. Still, it wasn't the most crowded place in the house, not like our jam-packed kitchen drawers or our scary closets with their looming boxes, for instance. Although clearing out our living room required more time and energy than sifting through the contents of a Toyota Corolla, it was still a project I could complete in a matter of hours. And that's what I did. Immediately afterward, I sat my tired self down on the couch in the living room that I had just minimized, at least for my first time through, and looked around at what I had accomplished. I remember the moment distinctly because it was an odd experience viewing my new living room. With fewer physical possessions obstructing my view or demanding my attention, everything felt calmer, more peaceful. It had been a lot of work, but it was worth it. I commented to my wife, "It almost feels like energy is able to move more freely in this space, with fewer things cluttering the area." It was a feeling that would motivate me to create a similar atmosphere in my bedroom, my bathroom, my office, and all around the house. This important victory provided me with confidence and motivation going forward. In this chapter, we're going to start giving you a minimalist home makeover in two manageable areas: your living room and its more laid-back cousin, your family room, if you have one. I know that, from home to home, the time required to minimize these rooms may vary significantly, but for most people, minimizing the living room and family room represents an accomplishable goal. If you begin here, you'll score a win relatively quickly, and you'll start building up your mental and emotional muscles for decluttering. If you happen to be one of those people who have a living room or family room where everything seems to collect, I see that a lot in small apartments, never fear. What you'll learn in this chapter will help you tackle these rooms bit by bit until it's all done. The living room and family room are still great places for you to get started in creating the home and life you want. And if you've got mountains of possessions in those rooms, well, your victory over them will be all the sweeter for you. You'll get a lot done, and in an important place. When you think about it, the living and family rooms are the most public places in your private home, aren't they? Here's where you can get together with all the loved ones you live with. Here's where you invite your friends to sit down with you and talk, or have tea, or watch the Super Bowl on television. If you host a club or a church or neighborhood group, it's likely you'll be gathering in one of these rooms. These are your us rooms. So minimizing in these rooms immediately starts helping you not only to enjoy the benefits of minimizing yourself, but also to share them with others. Relationships are the life of the body that is a home. You can start enhancing those relationships at once by beginning your minimalism makeover in the prime gathering places of your home, the living room and family room. What to do with the things you remove? 1. Donate. Salvation Army, Goodwill, and similar nonprofits will take your unwanted belongings and resell them at a low price to people who can't afford new things. Or maybe you have a locally based nonprofit, homeless shelter, refugee resettlement program, battered women's clinic, or whatever it may be that accepts donations. You'll feel good helping them out, and you'll get a tax deduction too. 2. Sell. Garage sales and online sales are possibilities for some unwanted items that maintain value. Just have a realistic understanding of how long it might take to sell them and how much you might get for them so that you're not disappointed. If you find yourself selling items for a fraction of their original cost, don't get depressed because of it. Use the experience as a reminder of how it's so often better not to buy something in the first place. 3. Throw away or recycle. If something is no good to you anymore and nobody else is going to want it, then decide whether it goes in the trash bin or the recycling bin. Please recycle whenever you can. Minimalism isn't just for your own benefit. It is also a practice that is kind to the environment and to future generations. What you want out of your public-private spaces. A living room is a space that almost every home has. 2/3 of newly built homes in the United States also have a separate family room. In a throwback to earlier days, more and more homes today have a great room, combining the functions of a living room and a family room. If the floor plan is open concept, such spaces may flow into other rooms, usually a kitchen or dining room. But regardless of how it does it, every home tries to accommodate human gathering. Inspiration, Jessica's story, the gathering space. The great room in our home was often wasted space. We wanted it to be just the opposite. We wanted the room to be an area where people, both in our family and from outside our family, would feel comfortable to stop, sit, relax, and chat. We minimized this room with dinner parties and gatherings with friends and family in mind. As a result, we kept a table and chairs, placed 2 vintage chairs by the fireplace, and hung our daughter's artwork on the wall. No TV. It was all about conversation. My husband even began referring to the room as the gathering space to further promote the goal we had in mind. And wouldn't you know it, once we began crafting that room around a specific purpose, the room began to serve it. There was one moment I will never forget shortly after we finished this room. 2 of our daughters returned home after a particularly difficult evening. Just steps inside the door, exhausted, they both plopped down in those vintage chairs and started talking. My husband and I exchanged a glance, and what would have, in a typical living or family room, been a few minutes of chatter, followed by drowning in any number of distractions, turned into the first significant moment in that space. We pulled out pencils and paper and brainstormed ideas about how to handle their situation. Over the years, this simple, decluttered area by the fireplace in our great room has become the most sacred spot in our home. If anyone needs anything, she knows that if she takes a seat, someone will be along any second to chat, play, cry, plan, or whatever. I truly believe the simplicity of the space is what contributes to its sanctity. The removal of the unnecessary has allowed the most important things to take precedence. Jessica, USA. If you have a separate living room, it is probably the most formal place in your house. Prepared as a space not only where the members of your household can get together, but also where you can entertain guests and feel proud about the surroundings. You might put your finest furniture here, mount your most attractive artwork on the wall, and take your best shot at decorating tastefully. You've probably got the seating arranged in a pattern conducive to conversation. Maybe you've placed interesting objects on shelves to serve as conversation starters. If you have a separate family room, it is similar in a lot of ways to your living room, but may be more casual and comfortable. Although you could invite your guests to sit down here, this is first of all the place where the members of the household go when they want to get together. Here you've paid attention to making sure the couches and chairs are comfortable, and you may have set up the seating for easy television viewing. Maybe you have family photos on the wall, reminding you of loved ones and the happy times you've spent together. Maybe this is where you keep games, puzzles, and other diversions to share. Now, this is my point in going into all this. Just as you should have purposes in mind for your home as a whole, so you should have purposes in mind for each room in your home, including the living and family rooms. As you're minimizing in a methodical way, you should bear in mind these rooms' purposes so you can decide whether the possessions within them belong there or not. Whenever something in a room doesn't further your goals for it, then it is a candidate for removal. The purposeful leads right into the practical. For example, maybe you will decide that your living room, as it stands today, is too formal. It's not a comfortable place and rarely gets used. So maybe you will start minimizing by getting rid of items that make it feel too stuffy. Maybe you realize you don't really need seating for 10 in your living room. You never have that many people over at one time anyway. Get rid of a sofa, and all of a sudden your conversation grouping is more intimate. Maybe you have a recliner where you love to sit in the family room. Park yourself there and look around, asking yourself which objects enhance the peacefulness of that setting for you and which do not. Maybe you need to eliminate a bunch of toys your kids have outgrown so they have room to play with the ones they still like. Maybe you don't like how much time you and your family members are spending on electronic devices. In that case, it could be time to get rid of a television set or game console. Since these rooms are places used by the whole household, of course you should also ask the members of your family what they would like to keep or get rid of in these rooms. Talk out your minimizing strategies in these rooms together. Do the work of removing items together. Enjoy the benefits together. This is the perfect way to establish your minimalism home makeover as a family project with buy-in and celebration all around. If you live alone, you might want to ask a close friend to come over and give you some advice about what to hold on to or eliminate from the perspective of someone who frequents your home as a guest. She'll be glad to give her opinion. And besides, you might need help moving furniture. Put your work clothes on, get some boxes ready. It's time to get started transforming your home. The convenience fallacy. There are certain places in our homes where we tend to leave items out because we think it will make it easier for us to grab them when we want them. I'm talking about things like these. Old DVDs of our favorite movies piled on the entertainment center. Small appliances occupying space on our kitchen counters. Toiletries clustered beside our bathroom sinks. Office supplies on our home office desktop. Tools on our tool benches. By leaving these things out, we think we're saving time when we need them. We think we're simplifying our lives. I call this the convenience fallacy. Consider those old CDs you've held onto for years in a CD tower in your family room. Sure, by leaving them out, you save a couple of seconds when you want to grab one of them. But for the other 99.9% of the time, they're sitting out where they create visual distraction. Since it would take very little time to pull a CD out of a storage cabinet and put it back when you're done, wouldn't it be better to keep it out of sight instead of where it's contributing to clutter and acting as nothing more than a visual distraction in your space? The same goes for most, if not all, of the things we leave out for convenience around the house. Step-by-step minimizing for your living room and family room. As you're working through these stages and handling each object, remember to ask yourself, does this align with my purposes? Is it so useful that I have to keep it? So beautiful that I can't live without it? Or so personally meaningful that it has to stay with me? In other words, do I need this? Whenever the answer is no, get rid of an item and do it gladly. The space you open up will be more worthwhile to you than whatever you're removing. Step 1. Relocate things that don't belong. In a minimalist home, every item has its own home. Some things live in the garage, others live in the basement, the bedroom closet, or a drawer in the kitchen. When your house is overcrowded, finding homes for every item can be difficult, but the more you minimize, the easier you'll find this to be. So as you approach your living room or family room, begin by relocating those things that don't belong there, returning them to the rooms where they should be. For example, maybe dishes need to go back to the kitchen, or some tools left in the corner need to go back out to the garage. I know this isn't minimizing, it's rearranging, but it's also a precursor to minimizing because sometimes it's easier to decide what to keep and what to eliminate when you see an entire category of possessions in one place. On the other hand, if you do pick up some things that don't belong in the living room or family room and realize immediately that you don't need them at all, don't wait to minimize them. Go ahead and place them in a box for discarding or donating and get them out of your home altogether. The momentum is just getting started. Step 2. Clear the flat surfaces. Next, begin to tackle open, flat spaces, by which I mean shelves, bookcases, tabletops, and the like. It's interesting to me how so many of us accumulate the same sorts of items on these surfaces. Vases, candles, souvenirs, ornaments, propped up photos, art books, collections of figurines. Individually, there may be nothing wrong with any of these items. Collectively, they can become too much. How quickly they begin to distract attention and clutter up a room. Don't let that trend continue in your home. Remove the knickknacks and decorations that no longer serve you. If a target number is helpful, try to remove 50%. Keeping just the items that mean the most to you will help them get noticed. More on this soon. Step 3. Declutter the entertainment center. Move on to the entertainment center if you have one. These large pieces of furniture often harbor lots of small items that we don't need anymore. They can look messy and be a pain to search through when we're looking for something we want, usually in a hurry. So do something about yours now. Take out old electronic components, cords you don't need, and discs and games that nobody is going to use anymore. Get rid of them. Please recycle electronics responsibly. Check the guidelines for your area. And then arrange the devices you do use in an eye-pleasing display, hiding their cords as much as possible. You may have DVDs, CDs, and pieces of video game hardware that are often left out to make them easy to grab. Change that thinking. Rather than leaving anything in plain view, put those items in the freed-up hidden spaces you're about to create in the next step. The more we leave out where we can see it, the more of a distraction and source of stress it becomes. Step 4. Dig into storage areas in these rooms. Some of the best spots for drastic minimizing in the living and family rooms are spaces that are hidden from sight. Cabinets, drawers, game closet, and so on. A room might look neat when these spaces are shut off from view, but you know how much stuff is packed in there. And you're the one who is going to be wasting time whenever you try to dig stuff out of these crowded places. So be ruthless in removing items from there. Decks of cards, packs of matches, old magazines, out-of-season decorations, dog-eared books, throw blankets. These are just a few of the things we tend to keep hidden away in the living or family room because we might want them. But will we really? For many people, the items stored in places that are hidden from view have not been needed for years. You may not remember where yours came from or why you got them in the first place. Free up that space by removing everything you don't need. You'll want to use that space for things that are actually worth keeping. Step 5. Remove furniture and other large items. After you've removed the smaller things from the room, you should have a better sense of whether some large pieces in the room might be no longer necessary and are just in the way. What larger items have you got in your living room or family room? A big fake plant, an ottoman you trip over like Dick Van Dyke, a display hutch you inherited from grandma but never really liked, a high-back chair hardly anyone sits on because it's so uncomfortable, a set of pillows everyone just keeps moving back and forth on the couch. Depending on how large the item is, you might need a plan for getting rid of it, such as scheduling a truck to come and pick up a piece of furniture for a donation site. That's okay. As soon as you can, get it out of there. See what a big difference it makes immediately. Minimalist home value. Togetherness. Would you like some good news for a change? Parents are spending more time with their kids. Believe it or not, it's true. A University of California study shows that moms, on average, spent nearly twice as much time with their kids in 2012 compared to moms in 1965. 104 minutes daily in 2012 versus 54 minutes daily in 1965. Meanwhile, the time that dads are spending with their kids has nearly quadrupled, an average of 59 minutes a day in 2012, compared to an average of 16 minutes in 1965. I love it. Don't you agree this is a trend we should keep pushing along? That's one reason why it's so important for us to make sure that those parts of our homes where people gather have an inviting aspect, are functioning well, and aren't requiring us to spend more time taking care of our stuff than interacting with the people we care about. The kitchen and eating spaces are prime places where people get together in our homes. But even more deliberately, the family room and living room are designed to bring people together. And it's not just bringing together parents with kids, by the way, but kids with kids and mom with dad too. In fact, anyone who happens to live in the household, plus the guests who come over, will gather in these spaces. To know we are loved and understood, we have to spend time together with our loved ones, intergenerationally talking and enjoying shared activities. The kinds of things, in other words, that take place so well in a peaceful, clutter-free living or family room. Things that tell your story. As you look around the living and family rooms, ask yourself, what culture am I establishing in these places? What am I communicating to my family and friends? Two of the primary ways that those rooms speak to those who occupy them are with the items we put out for display and the photos or artwork we put up on the wall. Display items on shelves. I have a friend with a bookcase in her living room. The last time I visited her, I noticed the following on its four shelves. 36 books, 11 figurines, 24 photos, 2 souvenir coffee mugs, 10 snow globes, and it wasn't even winter, various flower arrangements in vases, and a small sampling of candles. Yes, I actually wrote down the inventory when she wasn't noticing. As I looked at her bookcase, I asked myself, which of these things mean the most to her? What is it that she values most? I couldn't tell by looking at her bookcase. It was too crowded with things that were unimportant. One benefit of minimalism is that you are able to visibly declare what is important to you. Look around your living room and family room again. What do the remaining items communicate? If a stranger walked in, what would he identify as most important to you? Is it most important? Or have the most important things in your life become crowded out by less significant things? What would your family say your living room, family room, or great room communicates about your values? Do your decorations tell a story? Do they communicate a culture? What about the layout of the furniture? Does it promote family interaction or simply focus all eyes on the television? Is that what you want? Pictures on walls. A few years ago, we decided we wanted our home to better share our story. Our desire was to decorate in a way that clearly communicated what was most important to us as a family. As a result, we removed outdated objects, knickknacks collecting dust, and any decoration bought only because it matched the color of our couch. What remained were the pieces most important to us: photos of our family and growing children, a scenic image of Vermont given to us by friends, a beautiful piece of art we received on our wedding day, and a few items that have always been important to my wife. Each of our decorations tells a story. Our home and the pictures on our walls display what is most important to us. Now, I realize that personal tastes in this matter vary widely. The art of making a home is always going to look different from person to person, and I know we hang far fewer pictures on our walls than most. But generally speaking, we all tend to hang the same types of pictures on our walls. We hang photos of our family. We mount photos from places we have visited or would like to visit. We put up inspirational words about love and laughter and living life to the fullest. We frame images of a life filled with quietness and rest. Nobody hangs images on their walls of a hurried, busy, stress-filled life. Nobody displays photos of money, and nobody decorates his home with pictures of another day at the office. Instead, on our walls, we celebrate family, friends, and faith in a better world. But then, for some reason, we head out the door to live hurried lives of desperation. We rush from one appointment to another, hoping to find a better life through worldly gain. And each day we pile anxiety upon anxiety. Meanwhile, the pictures on our walls invite us to something better. They remind us of a life lived on purpose, with meaning, and they call for us to focus on the very things that make us human. Or at least they should. Let's be intentional about what we choose to communicate with the decorations on our walls and the culture we set in our home, starting first in the space where we spend so much time together. Ask yourself what is really important, and then have the courage to build your home and life around that answer. Hashtag minimalist home. People first. If the relationships matter in our lives, and of course they do, very much, then there's something special, almost sacred, about the primary gathering spaces in our homes, the living and family rooms. Are they inviting? Are they peaceful? Are they comfortable? Do they facilitate connections among people? Do they help us become the kind of people we want to be? If not, then minimizing can almost miraculously bring them back to the purposes for which they exist. I've said that getting rid of unnecessary objects enables the objects you do keep to gain in significance. Their beauty, usefulness, and originality are more easily appreciated. But I would even go so far as to say that the people in a minimized home stand out more as valuable than they do in a cluttered, overcrowded house. Somehow we can see each other better when not distracted by things. We are drawn to one another and are there for one another. The names of the living room and family room are revealing. Life is supposed to take place there. The family is supposed to be formed there. So minimize the public, private spaces in your home and watch how love wells up within them. You don't need more space. You need less stuff. Hashtag minimalist home. Minimizing checklist. How will you know when you've cleared out enough clutter and excess from your living room and family room or great room? Ask yourself these questions. Is the space calming? Does it reduce stress? Does this space encourage conversation? Is this space inviting to my family, to my friends? Is this space easy to maintain? Does this space highlight what is important to our family? Does this space encourage my family to live life to the fullest? Does this space promote our family's values? Chapter 4. Personal Refuge. Decluttering the bedrooms and guest room. Rachel Payne lives in Washington State with her husband and three daughters. A few years ago, Rachel's husband Rico, an Air Force reservist, was deployed for a five-month assignment at Travis Air Force Base in California. During this time, he was assigned to accommodations modeled after an extended stay hotel room. A room with a bed, a love seat, a couch, a desk, and a small kitchenette would be home for the duration of the assignment. Back at home with the kids, Rachel expected to hear tones of frustration from Rico whenever he called her and talked about his new living arrangements. After all, he had left all the comforts of his large house with its expansive furnishings. But what she actually heard surprised her. During their evening phone calls, Rico would comment on how much he was getting done, how unbelievably focused he felt, how little time he spent cleaning up, even turning down the cleaning service, and how little he missed all the stuff piled up at home. Over the course of the months away, he even began to talk about making changes at home, throwing everything away and starting all over in their approach to material possessions. Rachel couldn't wait to visit him when the opportunity arose to experience firsthand this new living space he couldn't get enough of. Her opportunity came later that year when she was able to visit him for a week. At the base housing, Rachel saw for herself the carefree living that Rico had described to her. Over the course of that week, she told me later, we didn't plan a lot of vacation-style outings. We just wanted to spend time together, and that is exactly what we did. We spent a lot of time in his room, and I enjoyed the calming nature of the environment. I read a lot, and we talked a lot. Her words resonated deeply within me as I asked for more details about her experience and emotions. She summed it up this way. I got a little taste of what life could be like with fewer possessions in my house. I couldn't wait to get home. I wanted my home and my living space to become a sanctuary for rest and focus. And that is exactly what she did when she returned. Starting with clothing in the bedroom, then moving to other parts of the home later, Rachel got rid of a ton of stuff. She and her husband have continued thinning more and more over time. We no longer want to be burdened by excess stuff, she said. And to think it all started with 1 week spent in an uncluttered hotel room. A hotel room may not be exactly your model for the bedrooms in your home, but you too can have more peaceful, restful bedrooms if you focus on removing unnecessary objects. A study led by clinical psychologist Pamela Thatcher discovered that hoarders have worse sleep than others. And even among those who aren't hoarders, the greater their clutter, the more likely they are to have a sleep disorder. This confirms what I've long believed. Quality sleep in an uncluttered environment recharges all of us to go out and face another day with courage and energy. Our home is a refuge from the world. Our bedroom is a refuge within the refuge. Let's make it better through minimizing. Inspiration. Nicola's story. A calmer, healthier me. One of my colleagues tells me she thinks I am the most ethical person she knows because I am always trying to save the environment. Despite trying to be as environmentally responsible as possible, I still accumulated far more than I needed, particularly in the bedroom. That was until 2 years ago when I minimized the possessions in my bedroom. Today, it is much calmer, a sanctuary. I started by removing clothes and shoes from my closet, but my efforts didn't end there. I removed makeup, books, magazines, knickknacks, jewelry, even storage tools like shelving and boxes. Eventually, I removed dressers and chairs, stand-up mirrors, and bookcases as well. Every time I opened up some space, I loved it and wanted more. What's interesting is that I always used to be late getting into bed. I wasn't necessarily productive in the evenings, more wasteful actually, watching TV or just puttering around the house until after midnight. But the more minimized my bedroom became, the more I desired to be in it, because it was so calming to me after hard days at work. I began spending more time in the evening reading books in my room, which resulted in falling asleep faster and sleeping more soundly. But the story doesn't end there. Because I was falling asleep more quickly, I had more energy. Soon I wanted to feel fitter. I started going to the gym and began a strength training program. I also started eating healthier and dealing with my stress in more positive ways, yoga or walks in the park. To top it off, in 2016, I ran a Tough Mudder race for the charity Alzheimer Scotland, This is something I would never even have contemplated before, much less been able to complete. I am learning new things about myself all the time. Minimalism for me is an ongoing journey, because life is. Nicola Scott.